Vajra Mahasya in class on October 26th. We're continuing with the introduction. We're speaking about Mahabhava, Radharani's intense love for Krishna, which is described in this verse, Ashtamayam Sadhana. Ashvishiva Paratam Panashramam Madarshanam Namatam Kurutava Yatatata Vavaramatavavata. The prana test to save another one. And then we've been giving an introduction to what is this level of intense love and what are the characteristics of it and the divisions of it. So at this stage, basically there's two characteristics. One, the love that Radharani experiences when she's directly with Krishna, which is called Modan. Modan Adi Rudabhav. Mahabhava. And then when she's separated from Krishna, it's called Mohan. And then that has different divisions. So we've come to the last division, which is Divyonmad. This is the sixth characteristic of Mohan, Adivrita Mahabhava, and Radharani separated from Krishna. This is the one we usually hear about because it's so special and so unique and has been revealed to the world in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, chapter 47 in Brahma Gita. In Brahma Gita, we see that Radharani she talks with a bumblebee, Brahma Gita, talking to the bumblebee. And in that discussion, she reveals all the characteristics of the Mahabhava revealed when she's speaking to this bumblebee. So let's hear. So this state of Radharani's love, which is called Divyonmad Mahabhav, this is a divine frenzy, which means an amazing display. This Adiruddha Mohan Mahabhava expresses itself in two forms. One is the speaking and the other is the action. One is called Udgurna, U-D-G-H-U-R-N-A, Udgurna. This means helpless acts and movements. This is seen, and we see this in the action of what they call a Vasa Sajayita. This is in Rupa Goswami's Ujjwala Nilamani. And this Vasa means to live, like you say, Vrajavasa. When Radharani she's separated from Krishna, he may even be in Mathura or Dwarka, but she actually forgets that, because her love and her madness become so mad, like someone's husband may die, and then at an early age, so the wife is moving around the house and she forgets, she starts remembering him and goes so deep in the remembrance, she goes a little bit mad in that mood of remembrance, and she forgets that he's dead and thinks, oh yes, he's supposed to come at 6 o'clock. It's 5:45, he should be here any minute, and she starts preparing herself. And someone will say, oh, you're crazy. So she's become a little bit absent-minded. This can happen even in our world, due to the movement of emotions and the intensity of the attachment. We can become bewildered and think someone is present who's not present, or think someone is absent who's not absent. So this example is given in Ujjwala Nilamani, where Radharani actually forgets that Krishna has gone to Mathura, and she starts decorating herself, and then she goes to the forest of Vrindavan and she decorates her Vilas Kunj. Kunja means a forest grove, and Vilas means where Radha and Krishna will enjoy intimately together. And she's expecting that Krishna will arrive, this Vas residence in Sajayita, and so he will come at an appointed time of night. But however, when Shyam doesn't come to the Kunja to meet Radharani because he's in Dwarka or Mathura, then she sighs deeply. Oh, this is sighing. She frets and she fumes and becomes a little bit angry. It's called Kandit. So this is the Udgurna aspect of Mahabhava, which is depicted and described in chapter 47 of Brahma Gita, the 10th canto. Now you'll see there also the second form of Divyam Mad Mohan. This is one of the sixth level of Mohan Adiruddha Mahabhava, Divyam Mad. And this is called Chitra Jalpa. And this is when Radharani is speaking or uttering deeply anxious and resentful words towards on meeting a friend of Krishna. Like, for example, you may have a beloved, and then you meet, say you love some girl, and then you meet that girl's, oh, let's say, make it more legitimate. You're married, you have a wife, and then you meet the wife's brother or the wife's friend, and you say, you know, your friend is like this and like that, which is, that friend is your wife that you're speaking about. You're telling this to another friend of your wife. Resentful words. I don't like this about her, and I don't like that about her, and this and that. You know, she's not true, and she's not faithful, whatever. So Krishna, when Radharani meets a friend of Krishna, and she starts speaking resentful words about her Shyam, her Priyatam. So this case, in the Bhagavatam, the friend came in the form of a bumblebee. Right? Brahmar Gita. The Gita, the song of the... It's not the song of the bee. The bees don't do much but buzz. The only song they have is bzzz. But it's Radharani speaking to the bee. Her song to the bee. Like Uddhava Gita is not Uddhava's song. It's Krishna teaching Uddhava, or Uddhava, in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, Uddhava Gita. And Bhagavad Gita, of course, this is Krishna speaking. So this, what we would say, Chitra Japa is crazy talks, mad talks. And there's one example of these. There's 10 different forms that are told there in 10 different verses of the chapter 47. And when it's samjalpa, this is consistent speaking regretfully and ironically, declaring the hero's ingratitude. That, oh, this Krishna, we loved him so much, and we gave him everything, and then he just walked away from us and never even looked back. Hasn't sent any message for so long, like this. Then another example is Abhijalpa. This consists in declaring the unworthiness of the hero's love on account of his hard-heartedness. So then in this case, Radharani will speak to the bee and say, your friend, he has no heart. We gave him everything, and this is how he treats us? And leaves us in the dust and he didn't shed one tear when he was leaving on a chariot. This is how he showed his intensity of attachment and love. He sat on the chariot, went away. Of course he was crying unlimitedly inside, and then he couldn't repress that in the presence of the gopis when he was leaving with his uncle Akrura. Krishna managed somehow to repress the explosive tendencies of his heart to burst out and cry. But when he got to Mathura, he couldn't restrain himself anymore, so he was crying so much behind the doors with Uddhava. And Uddhava was massaging Krishna's feet in his bedroom in Mathura, in the palace of Vasudeva. And he was seeing how much that was kind of like Krishna behind the closed doors. He would cry, and then he would come out in the public and he would smile, hello everyone, how's everything? Like we have a phrase in English, smiling on the outside, crying on the inside. I don't know if you know about that. They have such a phrase in Hindi, but hello, how are you? And we're smiling on the outside, but we're actually crying on the inside. But a devotee, when he contacts Krishna consciousness, then he sees Krishna's smiling face in his heart. And then when he sees the smiling face of Krishna's heart, then he smiles from his heart out to the world. So this is the difference between the smile of a devotee and the smile of a non-devotee. The smile of a non-devotee is a smile covered with misery. And the smile of a devotee is a smile coated in love, Krishna praying. I'll give you an example of this. In 1930s, there was a group of disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. And they had just eaten a nice feast, which is always recommended at any time. And they were senior members, they were sannyasis, brahmacharis, and the mat, of course. And they were sitting around in some room afterwards in a temple in Calcutta. And they had just finished this big feast. So the brahmachari sannyasis, they finished this big feast, and they were sitting in a room in 1930s in Bagh Bazar, Calcutta. And they were telling, I suppose, some harikatha, but they were laughing. Like when devotees have a nice feast, and afterwards, anybody, even non-devotees, when they eat a lot, they usually laugh a lot. Isn't it? I mean, it seems that when the belly gets full, the lips go up. When a, you know, like, when a belly gets empty, the lips go like this. There's some correlation between the volume of the belly and the position of the lips. Happy, full belly, happy face, empty belly, sad face. This is the theory. So they had honored the prasadam, and they were, it was Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Deva Goswami and some very illustrious, grave and advanced devotees in the Gaudiya Mission at that time in the 30s. And they were talking about whatever topics, and they were laughing. And while they were laughing and with each other and enjoying each other's company and association, they looked out at the room, the door of the room was open, it was the hallway. It was a very, it was Calcutta city temple, so there was lots of people coming, it was a Sunday feast or whatever. So they noticed, Sridhar Maharaj, he noticed one gentleman out there, well-dressed Bengali gentleman, he was peering and looking in the door in a very, you know, curious and attentive way. And then Sridhar Maharaj saw this and said, oh, you know, straighten up. this gentleman is looking at us and he may think badly of our Guru Maharaj that we're just sitting around here laughing and joking and not doing anything important or meaningful or beneficial for the world. We're just laughing and enjoying ourselves. But the man was looking with great curiosity and great attention. So they all, yes, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Dehino Shvinyata Dehi Komaram Yavaranja. So then that man, his curiosity caused him to go forward into the room, and he introduced himself, and indeed he was quite an exalted person at that time, that social milieu. And then Sridhar Maharaj, he asked a question. He said, you seem to be very intently looking at us, and please forgive us for maybe carrying on a little bit of a frivolous manner. And the man said, no, the reason I was maybe staring at you or transfixed by your behavior is it's the first time in my life I ever saw what I would consider genuine laughing. I was amazed that here was a group of men, adults, and they were laughing in such a way, such a happy, real, genuine, heartfelt, deep way, that I didn't denote a drop of artificiality about it. There was no some conditional laughing or some canned laughter like they have on TV, that ha ha ha, canned laughter. it was so attractive to me that I thought, surely this must be a reflection of the spiritual world. So I was amazed. And the man was duly impressed that he was a normal person in the material world who, actually being a little thoughtful and philosophical, he came to the conclusion, actually there is no happiness in this material world. It is all misery of various sorts. And he was like, what is this display I'm seeing? So he wanted to look deeply, is it real? It's extraordinary. It's otherworldly. It's alaukik. It's hasiras. It's transcendental. So the devotee presents a different idea. So we're speaking here about the six characteristics of mohan, adhirudha mahabhava. This last one, which is the culmination, let's say the topmost pitch of mohan bhav, sometimes called mohanakya, is Radharani's divyonmad mahabhav. And I mentioned that it has two divisions, the movements and physical actions, which are called udgorna, and then the statements and resentful words, which are called chitra japa. Don't be confused with japa, it's japa. And the different ones we cited. So this is mahabhava, the level of in separation, moha. Then there's this modan, because moda means in Hindi, moda means pleasure. So modan is when Radha and Krishna meet. But then there's one other division of this modan, which is sometimes gets confusing. It's also Adhirudha Mahabhava, it's called madan. And that's what Guru Goswami next describes, which, and all this is necessary because all these three levels of modan, or mohan, and madan are described in the verses of Ashtamayam Sadhana, discussion of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this Shikshastika verse. So when, because modan and mohan, mo, as you know in Hindi, mo, M-O-H, mo, moha, means illusion. Which generally some illusion means with some bewilderment, some separation, some unhappiness can be there. So similarly, then there's modan. Modan means mode, like you say bhakti pramod. You must have heard mode. Mode or modan means pleasure. So there's one Radha and Krishna meet, and this extreme special love that Radharani has in her heart, which she offers to Krishna, this is mahabhava. And it's called Adhirudha. So now this meeting has a special, when a meeting is very special, the modan becomes madan. I get confusing, but it's only three words really. So then this is called madan, Adhirudha Mahabhava. So madan is the highest stage of intense attachment, ever fresh attachment, which is called anurag. And that's the highest. No one can attain a higher state of anurag or intense loving attachment than Radharani at this stage. And this is the essence of our very Ladini Shakti. So all the different kind of bhavas or stages of love and prema are contained there. Sneha, Mahan, Pranaya, everything. And this Madanak, this is called Madanakya or Madan Adhirudha Mahabhava. It is a fully intensified Mahabhava found only in Sri Radha and in no one else. This Madan Adhirudha Mahabhava is always present within Radha, though it is not always manifest. It is manifest in union and unmanifest in separation. So this is very common. We've heard of Madan Mohan. Madan means, of course, Cupid, the god of love, accommodative. So this madan has some connection with that. The madan comes from the root word mada, which means intoxication. When Radharani experiences in union with Krishna, she's meeting with Krishna, her ecstasy, her intensity, her attachment, and the freshness and novelty of the expression of her feelings towards Krishna reached this supreme height of exhilaration and supreme height of joy and bliss, as it's mentioned, it's the very essence of the bliss potency, the essence of Ladini Shakti. Then it's called this Madan Adiruddha Mahabhava, and has the effect of intoxicating. It's called Madan because it means intoxication. Krishna becomes intoxicated. It has an intoxicating quality which is not found in the other type of Mohan Adiruddha Bhava and separation. Because there's some intoxication when Radharani is separated from Krishna in that bewilderment at Mohan. But when she's with Krishna, then that's the supreme level. This is what Rupa Goswami is saying. So this unique quality, in Rupa Goswami's own words, he says this unique quality of Madan Adiguru Mahabhava is impossible to describe or comprehend. So then what are we trying to do? Well, we're trying to describe and comprehend it, or at least hear about it. I think mostly we're trying to just hear about it to further understand and confirm our realization that Radharani is really special, really unique, and there's incomparable. And she is the object of our bhajan and meditation, and someday it's inconceivable to even imagine, but someday, some lifetime, we may meet Radharani directly in a spiritual world, which is the ultimate destination of the sadhaka. It's a real achievement. People do achieve it. Sadhakas do achieve such perfection. And we are to follow in their footsteps, and that is our manifest destiny of the progressive sadhaka that desires to love God and love His divine consort. Now we're seeing people and beings in this world. Imagine seeing Radharani every day. And Krishna. No, not a painting. Not a statue. It's such a... The moment to moment we see these beat up, torn out, bashed down bodies and a few young, shiny ones and lots of old, banged up ones. But when we go there, they're all shiny cars, all shiny and beautiful. And they, every time we see them, they look more beautiful than the day before. Whereas here is the opposite. Every day we see ourselves or see anyone else, we look more and more ugly. Some opposite natures here. So although it is impossible to describe, these are the kind of words that are used to describe it. Madan Adiruddha Mahabhava has the quality of eternally combining 1,000 different and even contradictory bhavas or sentiments associated with 1,000 different and contradictory experiences in relation to Krishna. Now if you can figure that out, then good luck. You can come and explain it to me after class. I don't think it's meant to be figured out. I think it's meant to keep us guessing. In other words, we have to get there to find out. We have to have a gopi sarup and be a maidservant of Radharani and receive the reflection of these feelings and sentiments in our heart in the course of serving her and her vilas. Then we'll have some idea of a few drops of the intense ocean of Radharani's mala. That's the ultimate experience. Till then, it's thousands and thousands and contradictories. And the acharyas, I think they enjoy tying people up in knots. You get some ropes and you grab somebody, tie their arms behind their back, and tie their mouth and their legs. Because their language seems to tie our brains up in knots. And then we don't know really. So for me, when I read these descriptions, and I just stop trying to figure it out. let's just serve. Let's serve. Like, the gopis never really tried to figure out Krishna. They didn't try to figure out how is he God, or how did he live Govardhan Hill? How did he have universes inside his mouth? When I asked him to open his mouth, the Brahmana God, as his friend said, he ate clay. They never tried to, Yashoda didn't try to figure out how that happened. She just thought, anyway, what is this? Anyway, here, take some sandesh and go to sleep. So I rather like their approach. Anyway, Krishna, whatever you are, we love to serve you. We want to serve you. We have to in the beginning. We want to in the middle, and we love to in the end. This is the basic progress. Our intelligence tells us we have to. And after some time, our heart tells us we want to serve Krishna. Or let's say it this way, our intelligence tells us we have to serve Krishna. Then after some time, our mind accepts the principle and says, I want to serve Krishna. Then after some more time, or maybe lifetimes, our heart speaks, I love to serve Krishna. I think that's the way it works. Well, I have to. Shastra says so. Guru says so. Oh, I want to. Prabhupada used to say, don't kill the spontaneous spirit of service. And that in itself is a remarkable piece of eloquence. This is an instruction to the leadership of managers. Don't kill the spontaneous desire to serve. So someone might say, oh, I want to do this service for Krishna. Do it. Just do it. It's coming from your heart. And it's not robbing banks and blowing up airplanes and stuff. I mean, it's something devotional. It's something that you may consider as favorable to Krishna and will give him pleasure. And you should certainly encourage that. For example, someone offered to make something for our deities. I didn't ask them. They called and said, I want to make this for Giraj. And I don't use those things in the puja. And I wouldn't have asked. I said, yes, sure, you make it. It's nice. You know, so then they made these necklaces. I bought these very costly crystal beads from God knows where, Switzerland or something. And they made it, and then I offered it to Giraj, and they said, did you offer it? And I said, I offered it to Giraj, like, very much. And then an hour later, I gave it to some other deities to wear. Radha and Krishna. So that was perfection. Supplanted. If I said on the telephone, no, I don't use those, I don't need those, and then that desire, that spontaneous desire gets squashed. One can what does he say? Madan Bhav has the unique quality of expressing 1,000 different kinds of enjoyment of union with Krishna just by seeing or remembering him. And these experiences are not just visions or spurtis. One can experience Krishna in 1,000 different ways because Madan Adhirudha Mahabhav causes Krishna's direct appearance, Adhirbhav. In addition, Madan Mahabhav presents these different experiences of union simultaneously with different experiences of separation. There's yoga and viyoga, which involves craving or utkantita for union. All these contradictory experiences are simultaneously enjoyed by one form of Radha. It's not by different manifestations or prakashas of Radha. Therefore, Madan Adhirudha Mahabhav is the fountainhead of all the various types of bhavas and bliss. The Madhura Rati of the queens of Dwarka goes up to the first stage of Mahabhav, which is called Modan, which is a type of happiness when meeting the Lord. Whereas the Vrajagopis, they experience the upper level of Modan Mahabhav, which are those six characteristics. And then it goes on to this madan, this separation, In other words, they leave the queens of Dwarka way, way far away, although they're both in conjugal relationship with Krishna. And Sri Radha alone experiences the topmost stage of this Madan Bhav, Madan Adhirama Bhav. So these are the very highest expressions and discussions of Krishna Prema, and this is where the Vajrahasya has brought us to that level. Mostly it's like we have art appreciation, so this is love appreciation. Appreciating the love of Radharani. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wanted to take from page 1 in chapter 1, and it's Pratamyam Sadhana to Astiyam Sadhana, he wanted to take everyone by the hand and bring them from babyhood crawling on the floor to standing, then walking and running. And finally, he wanted to liberate everyone to lotus feet of Radharani. That's our mantras. That's the intention of this handbook of sadhana, is to enlist lots of mantri servants, the feet of Radharani, Radhadasya. So obviously the goal and the objective of this book is to produce mantris. This is like they have technical colleges, technical institutes of technology. What is the goal of the Institute of Technology? To make a bunch of, to crank out a bunch of computer scientists or something. Engineers? What are they? Engineers. They don't produce writers and painters and musicians, right? Not from a technical school. So the intention of this, as he says, the progressive path of Naam Bhajan, the intention or the purpose of this university, of this Bhajan Rahasyam, is to teach a bhajan which will bring people from the point of Shraddha, faith in Radha and Krishna, to the point of serving them, especially serving Radharani in meditation. So this is this. We're about ready to start. And this verse has been nicely depicted because, actually, what my understanding is at this juncture is that it's so important to identify with and to understand and to reflect upon and to receive some reciprocation from Krishna's Parishads, Radharani and the Sakis. What is the content of their heart? What is their bhav? What do they feel? Because it's the land of feelings, it's the land of love. Prem Dham Vrindavan. So the externals and the rituals and the rites and all these things are, of course, they give some framework to a person's life. Ultimately, it's the feelings. So this verse is this Ashlishiva Parvatam Panashram, talks about Sambho, talks about meeting. And in the commentary of this verse, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, speaking as Radharani and Gambhira, he speaks very elaborately. And this in this elaboration where Radharani is speaking, on to Lila chapter 20, she is revealing her heart, her feelings. And why? Why is she opening up her heart? And to whom? Krishna knows her heart to some extent. And when he came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he could understand it. He could have relished it and kept it to himself. But he opened up, or she, Mahaprabhu opened up Radharani's heart for everyone to understand. So this, now we're going to start the verse and this, we'll read the translation and then we'll start discussing it. The verses and the balance of the class discussion on the Ashiyam Sadhana. So this is love and union, Sambhava Prem Bhajan. So the verse, of course, is Ashlishyava Padratam Panashtamam Padashnam Mama Marmatam Karotavam Yatatata Va Vidratantu Lampato Matpanamatastu Sevanam. Krishna's a Debauchi. Radharani's saying, it's Krishna, he's a Debauchi. He may tightly embrace me when I'm devoted to his lotus feet, or he may torment my heart by never appearing before me. Whatever he decides to do with me, he is the Lord of my life, and I'll have no other. This verse, it reveals in these words of Radharani, at least what we can understand from this, that she's revealing total dependence on Krishna, which is part and parcel of bhakti proper. It's the mood of dependence on Krishna. This is one of the elements of Sharanagati, is to be dependent on Krishna. Feel oneself incapable of existing or doing anything without the touch of Krishna, without contact with Krishna, the mercy of Krishna, depending. And the opposite of that, which is basically material consciousness, is independence. That I'm independent. I'm the Karta, I'm Karta. When one has reached the goal of spiritual practice and is steadfast in the perfected state, he becomes completely dependent on Krishna. This is shown in the last verse of Shikshastakam. So this is what the verse is showing us at our atmika level of understanding of this verse, which Radharani is uttering in her Divyonmad Mahabhav in this Gambhir Leela, one arm around the neck of Sura Damodara, the other arm around the neck of Ramananda Roy, who are none other than Alita Vishaka, saying, Ashlishyava Padratam. This Shan, this Lampat, this Devachi, what can I do? He's my Prananath, I have no other. This is love. It's taking this course. It's taking me here and there. Love is making me dance. Love is that prema is dancing and making me dance, and he is dancing. Prema is the only controller here. I have no control. So this is the goal of spiritual practice, to be totally dependent on Krishna, which is easier said than done. Now Krishna's Kaviraj, he's giving us Bengali shlokas, which were spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as his own purport or explanation of this verse, so we can, you say, fluff up or to expand upon this bhav, this intense mood of dependence, this intense love, this intense attachment that Radharani has for Krishna. And then he says, Zami Krishna Paradasi Teno Rasa Sukha Rashi Alingya Karayatma Sat Kivana Deya Darshan Janena Mora Tanuman Tabu Teno Mora Prananath. Radharani was saying, I am Krishna's maidservant, and he is the storehouse of all joy. Whether Krishna should embrace me or make me his own or not allow me to see him and cause my body and mind to suffer, he is still the only Lord of my life. Now this is Radharani speaking about dependence, about the freedom of Krishna and his control over life. And he's free to do whatever he wants, show himself or not show himself. So what is our experience? When we have a certain, you can say, glimmer of reflection of dependence, Krishna appears before me, but he hasn't yet. He may allow me to, Radharani's saying, he may allow me to see him or maybe not. Because generally we want some reciprocation. In any relationship, we want some reciprocation. This is our nature. We want reciprocation, give and take. I want to know that I'm loved, or feel that I'm loved, or see, or understand somehow that I am understood or appreciated or loved. We demand that. It's the nature of the jiva. Radharani's saying, I'm dependent. I may chant Hare Krishna for 50 years and Krishna doesn't show himself to me. Maybe for 5 lifetimes. We may be very eager to have darshan of Krishna, and certainly that's healthy and desirable, and bhajan will bring that utkantita, that eagerness and craving to see Krishna will arise. It must, if one comes to ruchi and sakti, this is the symptoms. Eagerness to meet Krishna. Eagerness to see him. I don't see him. When you read the lives of all the great devotees, what few we've read in English, that's really a very deep part of their bhajan, that intensity. That was even in many cases they had become so advanced in previous lives that when they approached, when they began their lives in this life as sadhakas or searching their search for God, they began with that particular strong ambition. I must see Krishna. And then they would go to some local sadhus and say, I want to see Krishna. I want to see Krishna. They say, oh, you won't see him in Vardhaman or Calcutta. Better you go to Vrindavan and try to find some siddhamatmas. They can maybe show you how to see Krishna. Or even show you Krishna. He plays with them. He's in their heart. So then they come and then you read their story. He came to Vrindavan, he met so-and-so, he did so many austerities and this and that. And somehow or other received mercy and fulfilled his sankalpa to see Krishna or Radha. Sometimes he didn't even know it. Didn't even know he was seeing that. They disguised themselves as ordinary coward boys and came to his kutir and begged some water. And then when he was in his kutir doing bhajan, these same coward boys would come every day and graze their cows near his kutir at Govardhan. And it was about the same time every day, and the Baba was locked inside his kutir. And they would come to his kutir, and then they would, Baba, wake up! Baba, you're sleeping! Chat, Hare Krishna. Then he said, hey, get out! Get out, don't bother me. I'm doing bhajan. And every day they would come and say, Baba, you're sleeping. And every day he would get aroused and angry and say, Jal, leave me alone. So then one day they knocked. They said, voice here, that Baba, we're thirsty. Please, you give us water. So, of course, in Vedic Dharma, you can't, if someone comes to your door, if someone just jokes and tells you, Baba, get up, that's another thing. But if someone comes to your door and makes a request for water or food, then you must fulfill it as soon as possible. So the Baba got up from his meditation, he opened the door, and these two boys were standing there. Beautiful boys, the coward boys, and he looked beyond them. He saw so many other coward boys, and then the same usual scenery: hundreds of cows grazing under the trees and eating the grass like Govardhan. And he was struck. He'd seen so many coward boys, and he never saw any boys like this. And then he went and he got his whatever they call it, karava or something. These clay pots, a little spits called karava, little water. Pot made of Brajaraj clay, little spout. And then he offered it to the boys to drink with their hands like that. Drinking water. So he was wonderstruck at the beauty of these boys. He was looking at them. They were young boys. He was a grown, fully grown man, maybe 6 feet, whatever. They were small, 3 feet tall. So he's looking down, they're looking up at the Baba. And then he's pouring the water, and the water's falling on the ground in front of the Baba. And the boys are holding their hands like this, and the water's going in front, not landing in their hands. And the boys aren't drinking, and he didn't know it, and they didn't know it. They were just looking at each other. Like this. Because the boys were, he was transfixed, he couldn't take his eyes off these two boys. They were so beautiful, so innocent, so effulgent, so sweet, attractive, charming, delightful. He couldn't remove his gaze from their beautiful faces. So, then, And they went away. And they didn't take any water. The water went all in the mud. So then he went back and he sat down. He was a little stunned and he felt a little strange. And he thought, wait a minute, who were those boys? And immediately he ran to the door and he opened the door. And there was no boy. Those two boys were gone. There were no boys, there were no cows. And he looked and he ran out. And he ran out of his kutir and he looked and... And he looked all of it. It was a flat area. He couldn't see any dust in the air of any cow, sign of cows just running away very fast. And he went out on the ground, and he saw so many cows footprints in the ground. He said, "So many cows were here, and these boys were here. When I opened the door, I saw so many." And 2 seconds later, the whole thing is gone. Then he sat down. Oh, Krishna Balaram. He realized that he just saw Krishna Balaram. He started crying. Oh, all these days it was those boys, and I told them, get out, don't bother me, you guys. So this is an example of someone who came to Vrindavan, and this was only 80 years ago, and he had darshan of Krishna Balaram. So how does Radharani explain? First, Mahaprabhu gives this verse, and then Krishna's Kaviraj is saying that, then he explained it to Lalita Mishaka, to Ramananda Mishaka. Sakhi, please hear what I've decided. Whether Krishna returns my love or whether he makes me so unhappy that I die, he alone is the Lord of my life. Now Radharani, she's speaking this verse in the form of Mahaprabhu. So just imagine, Radharani is a perfectional devotee, Radha, Radhanam Sarvesha. And this is the heart of the perfect devotee. This is the mentality of the perfect devotee. This is the attitude, the outlook towards... Because Radharani is loving and serving the same person we want to love and serve, Krishna. And this is Radharani's mood of dependence. Absolute, total, and utter dependence on Krishna. And so she's teaching, what is love? We say, oh, Krishna praying. Let me avoid these 10 offenses and make rapid progress on the path of devotion, attain the desired result, which is Krishna praying. All these automatons and robots in unison say, Krishna praying. What is Krishna praying? How does it move? How does it act? What are the qualities and characteristics of it? Well, that's what the Goswamis came to show us. Love has never been described before in any sampradaya. All the worshippers of Vishnu, they just mechanically practice Vaidhi sadhana and develop some very reverential type of feelings towards Vishnu or Ram, and they go there and serve the Lord. But what love is was revealed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, the intensity of prema. So I'm serving Krishna, and I'm trying to love Krishna and do everything favorable for him in a favorable attitude and please him by my actions. Hear about him and chant his name and do everything I can centered on Krishna. But I would like him to return my love. This is an expression of whatever love I can muster in my little puny fly-like life. And I would like to get some return or some experience from the object of my love. Radharani's saying, well, he may return my life or my love, or maybe he doesn't. He may make me so unhappy that I die. Which means from our vantage point, our viewpoint is that I serve Krishna for my whole life and he doesn't, at least by my standard, doesn't appear to reciprocate at all. Then I do die. Anyway, he's the Lord of my life. Now that is extreme. Sometimes when Krishna leaves all the other gopis and he gives himself to me, body and mind, Krishna makes me feel like the most fortunate woman in the world. Naturally, how else could you feel? At those times, Krishna makes all the other gopis suffer by showing off to them while dallying with me. Radharani Singh. Krishna really knows how to mix the heart around and stretch it in 10 different directions. Then at other times, that unfaithful cheater. Now see these, as we read something about Mahabhava, the characteristics, and one of them was, you know, resentful speaking. Speaking resentfully, this is the characteristic of this Madan Mahabhava, Ajita Mahabhava, and that's called Chitrajalpa, one of the forms. So here's an example. She's speaking. That unfaithful cheater, that shameless rascal womanizer, goes off with his other girlfriends and dallies with them right in front of my eyes. Even so, still, he is my only love. I don't mind the pain Krishna gives me. All that concerns me is Krishna's pleasure. My greatest joy is to see Krishna happy. Is there anyone in this world who can honestly say that? I mean, the world of devotees, or let's say aspiring devotees. My greatest joy is to see Krishna happy. If that happiness comes at the expense of my suffering, it still gives me joy. That pain is my greatest pleasure. And Prabhupada translates the same verse a little differently. The same idea is there. In other words, if Krishna gets happiness by making me suffer, that suffering that I experience is the greatest cause of happiness for me. It gives me the greatest happiness. So sometimes we feel like we're suffering in devotional service, or let's say all the time. And that's, and Radharani saying, okay, Krishna's giving, it seems that I'm suffering in the service of Krishna. But Krishna seems to be enjoying it. He's happy, he's laughing, he's smiling to see me suffering. All right, then I accept that suffering that I'm enduring because my objective in life, I've already stated, my objective is to, my only goal of life is to make Krishna happy, yes? So now I see that Krishna is smiling and happy to make me suffer. So, all right, I accept that suffering as the greatest cause of happiness for me because I see that Krishna is getting happy by making me suffer, and that's the goal of my life. That pain that I experience at the cost for Krishna's happiness is my greatest pleasure. If Krishna is attracted by another woman lusting for her beauty and feels unhappy because she is unattainable, then I will go to that woman, I will fall down at that woman's feet, take her by the hand to Krishna's side and make him happy by having them enjoy together. Now is that conceivable in your wildest imagination? You're married, you're totally attached to your husband. Just hypothetically, so old days, not new, nowadays. You're totally attached to your husband. Then you see by chance that your husband puts his eyes on some other lady and seems to be quite interested and attracted to her. So unbeknownst to him, you meet with that lady and say, come on, I want to take you to my bedroom. So she brings that lady and says, my dear husband, here's the lady you're interested in. Now you have a good time. Impossible. Absolutely impossible with our mentality and our hearts and our understanding. Sometimes Krishna gets pleasure when his mistresses are angry with him. He enjoys being chastised and told off. When it is fitting, I get angry with Krishna, knowing that he enjoys it. But he can always, always appease me without much effort. As I get angry, that gives Krishna pleasure, like I enter into man or kandit condition. But because he likes it, he likes to see my face. Oh, he likes to hear me. You stupid! Ah. Because of all the time, Radharani saying, "I love you. You're so sweet." Then Krishna gets bored. You stupid! Don't you know anything? Tom. Oh yeah, this is nice. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. So, but although I show that mood of anger and opposition towards Krishna to increase his happiness, as soon as he does a little bit of pacification or consoling me, then I give up that anger. He can appease me or calm me down or remove my anger without much effort. The woman who continues to be uncompromisingly angry with Krishna when she knows that it gives him pain is living in vain. She thinks that her own pleasure is the goal. May a thunderbolt strike her dead. All I want is to see Krishna satisfied. Some lover of Krishna, for example, she may be angry with Krishna and not give up her anger because she's enjoying it. She's enjoying her anger. She's enjoying it because Krishna's feeling somewhat repentive and sorrowful, and this lover is enjoying it. This is what Radharani is saying. If by chance that condition happens, she's not giving in. And she's just making Krishna squirm and making Krishna very unhappy. But Radharani said, if some lady, if some gopi acts like that, then let a thunderbolt hit her head and die, because she's selfish. She's thinking of herself, her own happiness, and causing some pain to Krishna. And this is not the object of our love. This is not the goal of our love. If a gopi is envious of me, but satisfies Krishna and Krishna desires her, I will not hesitate to go to her house and become her slave. That indeed will bring me the greatest happiness. And she cites an example that's mentioned in Padma Purana. The wife of a Brahmin suffering from leprosy proved to be the most chaste of all women by serving a prostitute in order to please her husband. She thus stopped the movement of the sun, brought her dead husband back to life, and satisfied the three principal gods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. It's a long story. It's in the Bhagavad Purana. And this wife was a Brahmani, her husband was a Brahmin, and somehow he got leprosy. His nose fell off and fingers and whatnot. He was lusting after some very beautiful prostitute in the village that they were living. And the chaste Sati, the Brahmani, noticed that. So she went to the prostitute and she knocked on the door one day and said, May I serve you? She said, but you're a Brahmin. You're a pure lady. What are you doing here? Now a prostitute is considered rather low position. No, I just want to serve you. So she's serving, sweeping the house and washing clothes or whatever, with no pay or anything. And then after some time she said, what do you want? She said, I want to you to do a favor, that my husband could spend some time with you, but he has leprosy. So she said, all right. So then she went and got her husband. But her husband had no feet, because leprosy had taken away her feet. So she carried her husband on her back, the leper husband. So she's carrying her leprotic husband on her back to meet the prostitute. But unfortunately, along the way, on the pathway, his leper-diseased foot struck a sodom passing on the road. And she's not carrying him on the back, and his feet are hanging out like this, and the sodom passed by it. He said, hey, you stupid, what are you doing? You should be in a... Because leper is supposed to be not walking around the street. You're supposed to be living in a leper colony or on an island or secluded somewhere, but not walking down the main street of town. That's against the law and code of the society. It's highly contagious disease also. So the sage was duly offended. He said, I curse you to die at sunset. To the leper. So now... So the lady's carrying the leper, fingerless, noseless leper husband, Brahmin husband, on her back to the brothel to meet the prostitute. And she got there, and the prostitute and let her husband down, and then the prostitute came and said, so, and the husband, he saw that, and the prostitute, he had darshan, and he just started crying because he felt so bad. You know, his wife was so chaste and dedicated to make this whole arrangement. So then he returned, his wife carried him back home. And then his wife, she said, I'm going to take a vow that the sun will not set. You know, if my husband dies, by the curse of the sage, my husband will not, I mean, the sun will not set. So that's why it says here that she stopped the movement of the sun. Right? Brought her dead husband back to life. And so what happened now? The sun is not setting on the earth planet, which is not a very good idea. So then the demigods were approached. They went to Shiva, and then he said, I don't know, better go to Brahma. So then they went to Brahma, said, I don't know. Then they went to Vishnu. So then Vishnu said, what's the situation? He said, this lady has taken a vow to not let the sun go down, and she's so powerful by her chastity that the sun can't go down, and Suryadeva wants to take rest. He's tired of working all day, and he wants to take a break. So then Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu, they came down to this lady and said, listen, my dear Sati, Brahmani, you have to withdraw your curse because the sun wants to set, and this is the way it goes, you know, sunrise and sunset. So she said, but listen, as the sun sets, it says my husband will die at sunset. So if the sun sets, then I lose my husband. So the demigods said, listen, we have a lot of power. You take away your curse, let the sun set, your husband will die, and we will bring him back to life with a brand new body, 2010 Mercedes-Benz, 450 SEL. We'll bring him back with a brand new body. So she said, all right, Madame Nitaigora Haribol. The son said, the husband died and got a new body, and they lived happily ever after. Haribol! Jai Jai Sri Radhe! If that's what you call happiness, but anyway. So this Radharani is citing this story from the Puranas that... That I'll even do that. Krishna is my life and my soul. Krishna is the treasure of my life. Krishna is the very life of my life. I cherish him always in my heart, and I try to please him by rendering service. That is my constant meditation. She's the perfect devotee of Krishna. And we're trying to become devotees of Krishna, at least first.
Then Radharani, second.
So this is her prayer. This is Radharani's constant meditation, which means this is the constant meditation of a pure devotee of the highest caliber, the topmost devotee. Is this your meditation? Is this my meditation? What is that meditation? Prasadam is my life and soul. Sleeping is the treasure of my life. Arguing is the very treasure of my life. I cherish fighting always in my heart and try to fight with everyone I meet. That is my constant meditation. No.
Yes?
Radharani says, Krishna is my life and soul. Krishna is the treasure of my life. Krishna is the very life of my life. I cherish Krishna always in my heart and try to please Krishna by rendering service. That is my constant meditation. Words to live by. My happiness comes of serving Krishna, whereas Krishna's pleasure is in union with me. So Krishna wants conjugal vilas. He gets happiness. You know, rubbing Radharani's feet or brushing his hair, he does those things. But his happiness, his pleasure comes in union. Radharani, although it sounds rather unusual, she doesn't feel the same way. I'm happy just to serve him, to cook his breakfast in Nandagram, to sing for his pleasure, to play the veena, to dance according to his indication, to serve him, to fan him when he's resting, or to massage his feet, or to paint his face. I'm happy. So I give him my body. He makes me his mistress and calls me his divine goddess. However, I think of myself as his slave. Service to my lover is the essence of happiness, and even more pleasurable than union itself. Now, generally in the material world, in the dealings of conjugal love, here we're talking about the dealings of conjugal love, man-woman relationships, amorous affairs, the two man and woman will consider that union, conjugal union, is the greatest source of joy or happiness. And this same experience is going on in the pure transcendental way with the pure transcendental bodies. Now Radharani is saying, there's more happiness in service than union. She's the most beautiful female personality in the creation of everything. And Krishna is the most beautiful person, male person, God, and his consort, Shakti and Shaktiman. So we think everyone's madly endeavoring for a woman or a man to fulfill that pursuit by the relish and enjoyment of union. And when you get to the topmost level, God and his consort, she says that I get more happiness from service. So what can one draw from this? What one can draw on this plane, on this far removed plane of the sadhaka, is that there's more happiness that the jivatma, the living entity in the material body, be that jivatma in a man's body or a woman's body, there's much more pleasure and happiness in serving Krishna than having union with a man or a woman of this world. Because now we think something else. Due to our conditioning of thousands of lifetimes and thousands of species and our experience and our conditioning. Service to my lover is the essence of happiness and is even more pleasurable than union itself. So if someone becomes a brahmachari or sannyasi or brahmachari vyastra, whatever Prabhupada said. In other words, if someone lives a life of denial or celibacy when he's not experiencing this union with a woman or a man, and he totally absorbs himself in devotional service, serving Krishna, then he will spit at the thought. And Mukunda Mala Stotra, King Kulashekhar, is saying, Shushtivan, Shushtivan. There's one shloka where he says, when I even, because he was King Kulashekhar, he had like 300-400 queens. How many queens did King Dasharath have? Do you know who King Dasharath is? Who is he? Father of Lord Ram. How many wives did King Dasharath have? 365. How many wives did Ram have? One. You sure? Yes. Because there's 365 days in the year, right? There's Monday wife, Tuesday wife, Wednesday wife, Thursday wife. So this is the point that one will experience by serving Krishna, that there's more. I'm not missing anything. My 365 wives, or my one wife, or any wives. That pleasure is this is the essence of happiness. This is the perfection of happiness, serving Krishna. And as they say, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. That's an English phrase. I suppose we should say the proof of the quality of the kheer is in tasting the kheer. If you taste the kheer, then you'll know that this is really Bhadiya kheer. Bhadiya. Bilkul Bhadiya. It's very good, tasty. So this is the experience of one who has actually served Krishna, contacted. Because if you actually serve Krishna with a pure mind and pure heart, what happens? You contact Ladini Shakti. And Ladini Shakti is Radharani. So all of the pleasure that Radharani is feeling in serving Krishna, we will feel some drops of that pleasure when we serve Krishna. This pure service is on the platform of pure bhakti. And pure bhakti is nothing but Ladini Shakti and Samvit mixed together. The goddess of fortune herself is witness to this fact that I'm saying. Although she's lying on the Lord Narayan's chest, her mind is always on her service at his lotus feet, Padasevanam. Thus, Lakshmi serves Narayan as a maid servant. So Lakshmi, she's in the envied position of all the demigods. She's lying in the chest of Narayan. She's his consort. She can love, enjoy intimately conjugal love with Narayan. But she's thinking, I don't want this, lying on his chest, serving him like this. My mind is on his feet. Well, massaging someone's feet, this is the job of the shudra. This is the job of the beauty parlor when you get a pedicure or manicure. This is a servant's job. This is not the job of the queen of the universe. She's the queen of the universe, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. Everybody's worshipping her for money, millions of dollars. And what will they do when they get all that money? They'll hire so many servants. They'll hire so many servants to massage their feet and rub their back and cook their food and drive their car and clean their clothes and cut their lawn and fan them and this and that. So now Lakshmi Devi, whom everyone's worshipping for money, they get lots of servants. She wants to be a servant. She could hire everybody in the universe to massage Narayan's feet. She could hire Shiva to massage his feet, or Brahma, or anybody. But she wants to do it. So just see, Narayan's saying, I find happiness in serving my Lord. And so does Lakshmi Devi. Gauranga relished these words spoken by Radha, which show the characteristics. These words that Radharani spoke, that we read the English translation from Antya Lila chapter 20, verse 49 through 62. These show the characteristics of the purest love for Krishna. So our goal is love of Krishna. We want pure love of Krishna, Uttam Bhakti, Shuddha. Shuddha Bhakti. What is Shuddha Bhakti? Who is a Shuddha Bhakti? Bhakti. Radharani is the finest, perfect exemplar of pure devotion. There's no better, no higher. And what does she feel like? And what does she think? What is her outlook? What is her attitude? I don't know. I never read anywhere. You can't find it in Bhagavad. You read all the Puranas. You read all the different Puranas. There's Upa Puranas, and there's so many Puranas. You read the Upanishads, you read all, you'll not find anywhere describing the attitude of Radharani, or the feelings of Radharani, or what she thinks, not available. You will not find. Like Kasturi Manjari and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're showing us. Kasturi Manjari is Krishna's Kaviraj, one of Radharani's Asta Manjaris. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radharani came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to speak out her heart, to show the world, this is what I think, this is how I feel. This is the background of Gopi Bhav. This is the background of Manjari, being a Manjari. This is Bhav, this attitude, this outlook. Because we're supposed to be Tadatmika with Radharani and her Sakis Manjaris. They're all in line. The Sakis are in line with Radharani's heart. The Manjaris are in line with Radharani's heart. They feel this way. They think this way. They have this outlook and attitude. And this is all about modeling. We have modeling clay. Take some clay and you mold it. And model the clay. So these verses and descriptions and pastimes are modeling our the clay of our hearts and giving shape to our hearts. And ultimately, when our hearts are pure, then our hearts will manifest bhav and then prema and on to enter into the entourage of Radharani's eternal servants and assist in all these wonderful love-filled pastimes. In Gauranga's ecstasy, the Lord lost his composure and various transformations spread throughout his entire body. He became completely unsettled in body and mind. The pure devotional service in Vrindavan is like the gold nuggets found in the Jambu River. There is not a trace of personal sense gratification in Vrindavan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote this shloka, Ashlishyava Padaratam Panashtamam Adarshanam Mamahatam Guru Kava Yata Tata Va Vidadakti Lampato Madhpranatasu Sivanapara. Why? He wrote this shloka to announce his purest love to the world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. So this is the verse which we'll discuss in this chapter, and Radharani's heart is very clearly revealed here. And then tomorrow we'll begin starting the verses of this book and going through this form of sadhana.